When I got to D.C., when I started working at Normal in 1991, it was the 101st Congress, 1989 to 1991. Today it's the 114th Congress, 2014 to 2016. When I was there, it was basically myself, somebody from the ACLU, and the predecessor to the Drug Policy Alliance called the Drug Policy Foundation, and a gentleman named Rufus King, who will an award later today is named after him. That was it. There was about, and you didn't have to be a registered lobbyist back then, but there was only about three or four of us that worked in this field. And the people that we were lobbying, certainly the legislators, but a lot of their senior staff, I would describe as the World War II generation, otherwise known as the Reefer Madness generation. And the questions were ridiculous. You know, isn't it true that males develop breasts when they smoke it? Isn't it true that it causes criminality? Those were all the questions that we took back then. None. Almost never take those kind of questions. Today, it's down to the brass tacks of how will it get legalized? Who's going to make money off of it? How are the taxes going to work? The regulatory concerns, et cetera. And this was at the height of this thing called the war on some drugs. In most of the AP and Reuters polls of the day, when asked, you know, what is your biggest concern as a voter? From 88 to 96, it was drugs and crime, number one or number two. Today, that rarely cracks the top 20. And so it no longer, thankfully, fits the priority scale that politicians used to give it. In some ways, couldn't really blame them, right? That's what the public was in fear of, not that they didn't create that fear. And there was this deathbed of legislature called the Select Committee on Narcotics. It had the most anti-drug, anti-marijuana politicians from both parties and pox on both their houses because they brought all of this to us. It was not a partisan endeavor. And the media back then was viciously oppositional. You got no break whatsoever from the media. Neutral, you'd be lucky if you got a neutral story having to do with cannabis. I've repeated this many a time, the five reasons why marijuana is so politically popular today. Baby boomers, they're in control. Think of Mr. Obama. He's going to retire as president at like 53 years old. And someone who clearly enjoyed smoking some of the best marijuana in his life in Hawaii as part of the Chum Gang. The internet. I have been at Normal so long, I've been there pre and post internet. Scary, but beautiful. I cannot tell you how blessed all of you are who have grown up in the internet age, of how fortunate you are to have these communication abilities, to be able to pull down 23,000 studies on cannabis in the middle of the night if that's what you want to do. And it's made the media less oppositional. For example, you know, when they publish stories on regulation or on taxes or on environment or on the environment or whatever, you know, they get a certain amount of click-throughs and a certain amount of, you know, eye contact, which is how they measure their worth to these days and how much money they take in on advertising. Well, they can publish all that stuff, and they do. But that doesn't get a lot of activity, a lot of click-throughs. Marijuana stuff does. And so a new generation of journalists through the internet are discussing it in ways that were never conceivable. And political organizing. There's 1.6 million people in the Normal online network. And it doesn't cost anything to communicate with them. We could be sending them today, as we will, files and PDFs, which would have cost tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars in the 1990s to mail to people. And medical cannabis, no doubt. We would not be here today discussing marijuana legalization if the good citizens of California did not vote in the majority in 96 for medical marijuana. That sort of was a major chink in the prohibition armor. And today, circa 2006, 2007, local economies led by baby boomers want the tax revenue from cannabis. They don't want to spend the money on enforcement and prosecution and incarceration. So their values dictate that they want to do something different. And alcohol prohibition, the great failed social experiment, lasted about a dozen years. We're almost into our 80th year of marijuana prohibition, and we're just sick of it as a society, as most of the polls are indicating. And for the first 23 years I advocated for marijuana legalization at Normal, it was abstract. Right? Talk about what it's going to look like. What could it look like? Well, we've got the data. The data now exists in Colorado, and it's good. Society has credible and verifiable data on the results of legalization, the taxes, the jobs, the enforcement, the fact that there are not a lot of DUIs, not a lot of youth accessing marijuana, their attitudes have not profoundly changed in a permissive way. And Washington, Oregon, and Alaska are only going to give us a greater baseline of data. So very helpful regarding the end of the discussion here about polls and whatnot. Well, politicians pay really close attention to my last point, data regarding taxes and changes of law. It's not abstract anymore. We just have three general talking points that you can find yourself in with politicians. Just simply that, you know, as you see here, and these are all in your materials, so nothing is new here. I can just move through it quickly. Criminalization of marijuana is disproportionate public policy response to a behavior that is, at worst, a public health matter, but not a criminal justice concern. And that seems to have been a big change in public attitude over the years. Responsible marijuana consumers should not face arrest, potential incarceration, or criminal records, stigma associated with it, for using a substance that is objectively, I mean, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights here on this campus, I can promise you, it's as obvious as can be, that alcohol is much more problematic when humans interface with it, particularly if they abuse it. There are so many bills. Keith alluded to earlier, we used to have one bill. It was really easy to go up there and say, we're lobbying for this one bill. By my count, I think there are 14 current bills, House and Senate. I think before they wind down the session in terms of getting bills in, it could be as many as 20 bills will be introduced. So what would you be lobbying on? Are you lobbying over legalization? Are you lobbying for hemp reform? Are you lobbying for medical marijuana? Are you lobbying for sentencing reform? Are you lobbying for 280E tax reform? There are so many different things. So from our point of view here at Normal, oops, I'm sorry, let me just make my other points here. In the Senate, bill that Mr. Booker and Mr. Paul have introduced has really created a fascinating situation for possibilities in the Congress. We've never been able to go to the Senate and have a genuine bill to lobby around. And it is bipartisan. It's attracting folks from both sides of the aisle. Of these 20 bills that ultimately are going to get dumped into the hopper, I'm going to suggest to you really only two have any chance, and frankly not a great chance, of passing. And it's the banking regulation and 280E. I'll go over the bills in a moment. And the reason why, it's because basically all parties want them to happen now. The people who sell marijuana would like to have banking services, no surprise. The banks are in the business of taking in money. They'd like to be able to do it as well. The regulatory agencies and the private associations that oversee banking, they want these reforms to happen as well. So the last entity are the politicians. And I think that 280E and banking probably have the best chances to move. And all of this creates, metaphorically, allegorically, a marijuana maypole that we get to dance around. And we worked for 40 plus years, for all intents and purposes, with no maypole to run around. And media today regularly covers these topics and non-hysterically. The men and women that are covering these things are baby boomers or younger. Like the population in toto, about 1 out of 7 of them use marijuana. 1 out of 3 of them have used marijuana in their lifetimes. And again, the prospects of passage in Congress for any of these bills, despite us all going to lobby for them, is not strong. We are at the sui generis of this process. But, as I alluded to earlier, we now are joined by a phalanx of cannabis lobbyists. Look, a green pointer. So, you've got the stakeholders, Normal and Cannabis Action Network, We love marijuana. We're unapologetic about it. We like to use marijuana. Our partners and friends, as I call them, do-gooders, at the DPA and ACLU and Open Societies Institute, they don't talk in the first person, I promise you, about their marijuana use. Historically, do-gooders have raised the most money and advanced the argument the most. And so they are our most important partners for reform. We are now joined, finally, by the cannabis industry itself. By my estimates, there's 3,500 licensed marijuana businesses in the United States today. In places like Colorado, there's 15,000 licensed employees of these businesses. And so they now, through National Cannabis Industry Group, and they have other groups, but this is the primary group, is now lobbying for business interests. And that's why they can really concentrate on 280E and banking. Sure, they want marijuana legalized. That's kind of a given. But what they need to concentrate on is what affects their members the most. And that is definitely banking and 280E. And we'll talk again what those mean. And then you've got literally individuals. Aaron Houston is one of them, who lobbies for a private company, Ghost Group, which owns Weedmaps and Marijuana.com. Leafly, which is owned by Privateer, and a number of other private companies now hire lobbyists to be part of this whole menagerie of marijuana lobbyists. And we welcome it. Let all flowers bloom. And then you've got hemp lobby folks who just lobby on hemp. Vote Hemp, the Hemp Industries Association, and the North American Industry Hemp Council. Well, when they just lobby on hemp. And that's okay, no problem. And then you've got this hybrids, I'd suggest. Folks that sort of come off as do-gooders, but the reality is their funding base, their board of directors, they basically are front groups for the industry. Marijuana Policy Project and ACE, Americans for Safe Access, I would suggest to you now fit into this category. Now, some of the bills. Again, I'm not going over all 14 bills, but I am going to concentrate on the five or six that are really relevant and move through why they're so different and what they mean. So clearly, this one, HR 1013, is just simple. Just regulate marijuana like alcohol. Straightforward. Again, all this is in your packet, all the talking points, which I'm just going to show you here, they're all in there. The Senate Act, again, this is the most important bill probably dumped into the hopper this year because it was in the Senate, it was put out by a genuine liberal and a genuine conservative libertarian in Mr. Paul, and it's starting to attract senators from states that have passed CBD-only bills. And again, the talking points associated with that is found in your materials. The Veterans Equal Access, again, as Bill was talking about, only lost by 2 votes last time around. And so because Congress, and particularly Republicans, purport that they so strongly support our troops and veterans, well, this is one way that they can do so.
Alan.
Yeah. In the package, it does, in some cases, list the sponsors, maybe on only a couple of them. This one, if I'm not incorrect, is a Blumenauer. Anybody can correct me. Oh, nuts, I shut this off.
That's the Polis one. 13 is Polis.
Thank you. Thank you. So, I mean, there's literally a plethora of these. This is, again, a Booker and Paul. Gildebrand was also one of the original sponsors of it. Veterans, you know who does this one, Michael?
Blumenauer.
Yeah, we'll find Blumenauer on a lot of bills. He's a previous recipient of a normal award for good reason. He's terrific. Industry Hemp Farming Act. Frankly, I don't know who introduced this one either. But this one also, I would suggest, probably has some viability that some of the other bills haven't because we now have this gray area. We have the legal states that are producing hemp, but we have states that definitely have never passed any type of marijuana law reform, like Kentucky, where Mr. Paul is from, where they are producing legal hemp. So we are now starting to see states that haven't flipped towards reform, but will move towards hemp law reform. Again, the talking points associated with that one, Compassionate Access Act. This might be a Sam Farr bill. taking a stab. But all of these bills, not surprisingly, are introduced by members who come from states that have largely given them the ability to do so because the voters have chosen this path along with their legislature. The talking points. Now we're into the CBD-only legislation here. There are 13 or more states that have passed CBD-only legislation, and that has now trickled up to Congress, where there are now two separate bills being introduced. Again, there's information, I excluded that for the point of the discussion here for the lecture, but there's not a big difference between the two, but the CBD industry, such as it is the big proponent of these bills. And then what I call the cannabis industry favor bills, I talked to them earlier. This is H.R. 2076, Marijuana Business Access to Banking Act. Is this Denny?
Ed Perlmutter,
Denny Heck, and others from Washington have been, logically, Colorado and Washington, they rightly should be agitating Congress to make it so banks can take cannabis money. The talking points associated with it, and it's all about the money, and that's not a bad thing, not at all. The state's Medical Marijuana Property Rights Protection Act, well, that's probably fancy language to say if you operate a medical marijuana dispensary or a legal store, that the government can't take your property, or that the owner of the property who leased it to you is not subject to a federal forfeiture. Again, all stuff that makes sense as we move away from prohibition towards legal commerce. And I mentioned earlier the Small Business Tax Equity Act. That amends the 280E section of IRS code, which, not surprisingly, you can't write off. If you're a drug dealer, you can't write off your business expenses. Well, these businesses have master licenses. They're paying taxes, FICA, Social Security. So rightly, if they were not working under the yoke of prohibition, they would basically be taking about a 35 to 40% reduction in their taxes. And sure, some owners might be putting that in their pocket, and well, they should, but most of them would expand their businesses. They'd hire more people. So, that act has to change. Clearly, as marijuana is legal and a bank will take it, then businesses should be able to deduct those expenses. And again, I suggest to you, because business is now so focused on this and we're joined by thousands of legal marijuana businesses, these have good potential to move before the larger issues around legalization does. Again, I talked about earlier this gap. We have to address it. It's here. It's as clear as I have a nose on my face. There's about a 17 to 25% gap between people who self-identify as Democrats versus Republicans. So as reformers, I'm suggesting strongly, we have got to concentrate more, give a little more love and attention to Republicans, because we can't come to the dance with just one partner. It takes two to tango. And so normal DPA, MPP, all of our PACs largely give money to Democrats. People say, well, you guys must be partisan. You only favor Democrats. No, totally nonpartisan. Pox on all their houses for creating this mess. But if you look at the data and the years of us giving money, it's clear we've given 85% or more of our funding in the PAC to Democrats. And we've got to give more to Republicans. But we give it to them because they ask for it. When we send checks to Republicans, some of them send them back. So clearly, we've got to reach out more to Republicans. Of course, it shouldn't be hard. What is the rhetoric of the modern Republican Party? Free market, less government, personal responsibility, blah, 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 blah. I find when talking to conservative Republicans, it's pretty easy to take their rhetoric and formulate it around why they should be obviously, self-evidently supporting marijuana legalization. And politicians, they know how to count. They know how to count votes, and they know how to count cash. Again, at the end of the conversation here about surveys and polls, absolutely. That doesn't sway them. That doesn't move them. Votes, that moves them. Cash in hand, oh yeah, that gets their attention. And the surveys are great, but the donations and votes count much more. 14% of the public consumes marijuana in the United States, but about 55% of the public now supports legalization. So one could argue reformers have largely won the Hearts and Mind campaign. And we have to make politicians know that not only do we have well beyond our base of support? We've gone in a bipartisan way, multi-generationally beyond that. It's just not marijuana consumers and sellers who want marijuana legalized. And that arc is incredibly similar to the gay rights in the United States. If you've not read, I confer to you the excellent paper by William Galston and E.J. Dionne at the Brookings Institute 2 years ago. They largely take the data and the surveys and make the argument that just like with marijuana legalization, with the gay rights movement in the last 30 years, one finds a very similar pattern to marijuana law reform. And if you were a politician 25 years ago, you'd be rude to support gay rights and gay marriage. Today, arguably, you'll be behind the political curve if you're not in favor of those reforms. And I think we can make the exact same argument. I mean, again, by any count, maybe 10% of the public is gay, but look in our lifetimes the amount of sway and the amount of deference gay individuals have received in this country, as they should, as they fought so hard for it, as we are fighting so hard for these same civil rights, social justice. And more state reforms, again, it's so obvious, more state reforms happen at the federal level only if it happens at the state level first. It never happens the other way. It might be self-evident to you. So here in Congress, when we meet with folks, they constantly look back to their local constituents and to their local editorial boards and columnists and surveys and recognize that these laws are changing and they have to move along with it. So my last point here is we need an easy equivalent, and this is an open question. A former normal board member, Richard Evans, who lives in Northampton, Massachusetts, who was just profiled last weekend in the Boston Globe in a wonderful way, he and I for 20 years have been talking about this. Because in essence, when you look at alcohol prohibition, it really did get down to you were either wet or you were dry. And it was such a great metaphor, wet, dry. I don't know. We've never been able to come up with what that equivalent is. But we need it. We need to have that saw, that juxtaposition. And so I don't know what the equivalent is. You know, I know that when I look at the data, again, that if only 14% of the public uses marijuana, but 55% want to see its reform, those people are tolerant. They're not using marijuana. They're tolerant of it. They want the reforms. So I don't know. They're tolerant. Are they tolls? That's not going to fly. The folks on the other side of this, and as Bill was mentioning, we don't want to challenge people's worldviews and say, you know, your morality, your moral turpitude is different than mine, but we can say they are intolerant. These are folks who are okay with tobacco, they're okay with alcohol consumption, pharmaceuticals, they're okay with people standing outside in a line at a Starbucks. They have no problem with that. So I'm suggesting we need to have the ability when we're meeting with legislators to basically say to them, what are you? Are you tolerant? Are you intolerant? You know, are you green? I don't know. But somehow I think we've got to work through how we do. And the bottom line I would suggest to you is simply this. So no matter all these bills we have to lobby on, this I'm suggesting is our bottom line. Cannabis prohibition must, in the United States, post haste and be replaced with constitutionally compliant, free market, and consumer-friendly tax and regulate policies. The prohibition is no longer popular in popular surveys and voting booths. More and more states are legalizing cannabis, taking in hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes and putting upward political pressure on our government. So again, thank you so very much for coming to DC for this. We're going to take a break for about 10 minutes and come back for the state lobby group. And I just, again, have to suggest the states are really where it's happening. So please play due diligence. Thank you so much.